Hi everyone and welcome to Sports Community Podcast episode number 25 with your hosts Jonah Veller and Steve Pallas. Welcome to our show. Today we'll be talking about all the latest in the world of grassroots sport. Hello everyone and welcome to Sports Community Radio here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. My name is Jonah Veller and along with my co-host Steve Pallas, we'll be talking all the latest in the world of grassroots sport. G'day Steve, a big welcome to you mate.
G'day, Joe. Welcome to you as well.
Now, mate, we were having a bit of a conversation in the office where we were kind of dreaming about the bucket list of sporting venues that we'd like to go to in our lifetime.
Hold on. We weren't dreaming at all. You were telling me quite happily and quite merrily that in about 8 weeks' time when you're holidaying in September, because it looks likely that North Melbourne won't make the finals, Joe, that you're headed to the home of Liverpool Football Club, Anfield.
Absolutely. I am. I think I'm going to be lucky enough to be, well, I have been lucky enough to be invited to one of the most famous sports arenas in the world, of course, the Anfield grounds where Liverpool Football Club calls home. They're going to give me a tour around there, which is fantastic, which kind of encouraged us on to a further conversation about other places that we dream about going to visit. When Steve here pulls out a recent trip that he made to the US, which sounded to me very much like an absolute dream, a sports person's dream trip. Now, I wonder, mate, if you'd be good enough just to go through that with the listeners out there. Give us that week that you had in New York.
Yeah, I'm just reflecting on just how little work we did this morning in the office, Joe, to be honest. And I can't remember the year. It was the year that Collingwood played St Kilda in the drawn grand final. So, and this was a trip that I did with my wife, which was really, really very special for us because she's very much a sports fanatic as well. But we flew into New York, Melbourne to LA, LA to New York, straight through, landed at New York at about 5 o'clock. On a Sunday morning, New York time, went straight to bed, which was against all our instincts because you wanted to get out and see the Big Apple. Went straight to bed, slept for 5 or 6 hours, and then we were guests of honor at the New York Magpies Grand Final party. We decided that we're going to watch the Grand Final, the AFL Grand Final, Collingwood versus St Kilda, and because I was working in football at the time, I kind of thought, well, it'd be good to watch the football with the New York football team. Didn't realise they were the Magpies till they said, yep, here's our logo and here's our email. And anyway, Collingwood were playing, so a good friend of mine, Wendy Goldsack, mother of Tyson Goldsack, who was playing in the grand final that day, I asked Wendy if she could possibly get me a signed Collingwood jumper to the New York Magpies from the Collingwood Magpies with a few signatures. And she did, I took a photo of it, sent it over to the New York boys and said, we'll bring this when we come. And they said, fantastic, your name's at the door. Rocked up to the venue, middle of Manhattan, can't even remember what time it was, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock on a Sunday night. And there was a queue of 50 or 60 people, rocked up to the door in our most ochre Australian accent, give it the g'day, mate. And the bouncers said, Stephen and Shana. I said, oh, it's not good. Yeah, because normally when the bouncers know your name in Australia, Joe, she's not a good story.
No.
And not only did they let us straight in, but they took us upstairs, massive party, 50 people, 500 people, sorry. All there watching the grand final, guests of the president.
Wow.
And that was outstanding. So that took us through at about 6 o'clock on the Monday morning. Monday 1 o'clock, we had to be at Yankee Stadium to watch the New York Yankees versus Boston.
You just had to be, didn't you?
Boston Red Sox. That was at the new Yankee Stadium, which had only recently been opened, which was just an experience to behold going to Yankee Stadium. It was extraordinary, and we haven't got enough time to me to explain that. By the way, the AFL Grand Final was drawn, so we had another AFL final to come. So that was on the Monday. On the Tuesday, we had to make our way down to, and I might have my days wrong here, but we had to make our way. The very next day was to Meadowlands Stadium, which is the home of the New York Giants. So the next day we got to watch the New York Giants versus the Tennessee Titans.
I love the way you're using had as if someone's like just, you know, frog marched you to these events, but I'm sure that there's a bit of choice.
All right, I'm going to use had the next 2 days, Joe, because the next 2 days I had to go to Broadway to watch.
Okay, that's different.
I think Les Mis was one of the shows, and that's
now that's definitely a had. That's not a choice.
That was a had, but too that one. But yep, love the theatre. But then on the Thursday, I think it was, straight back to the sports, Madison Square Garden watch the New York Rangers, I think from memory, play in the hockey against Detroit Red Wings from memory.
Wow.
And yeah, that was fantastic. So then the Friday was a travel day, but on the Saturday we were meeting a very good friend of ours at Sports Community, Andrew Brown, and his family of 4 kids and his wife, so family of 6. And
that would have been the day of the drawn grand final replay.
Friday was the travel day, Saturday, somewhere in there. And we rang him up and said, "Brownie, we got the grand final." We said, "There's a problem." I go, "There's no problem, Brownie. There's another grand final. We're going to find a place to watch." He goes, "Yeah, there's a problem. I've bought us front row tickets to the ice hockey right behind the sin bin." Like, literally, and I'm talking right behind it to the point where Brownie's young son, Jordan, was given the puck by one of the sin binned players. We were that close. So right on the ice, we saw the ferocity of ice hockey. So
now I'm hoping there's a happy ending to this.
Collingwood lost, Joe, in the grand final. So we managed, there was an hour difference between the end of the ice hockey and for us to get back to the hotel and watch the football in our hotel, which was fantastic. So in a 7-day period, we managed to watch 2 AFL grand finals, a day of the New York Yankees, the New York Giants, and a game of sport, ice hockey at Madison Square Garden. Plus, two games of ice hockey, one in Washington with the Washington Capitals. That was a pretty fair trip.
Mate, that's more than just fair. I think there are a number of us very, very jealous, and he covered a few of the bucket list right there and then.
We ticked it off, Joe, we did. And it was very special to actually share that with my wife. When I talk to my mates, they find it very hard to believe. That's the sort of trip that you're allowed to go on with your wife, but special girl, so fantastic.
Absolutely. All right, stay tuned. After the break, we're going to come back with some special guests on Sports Community Radio. You're with Joe and Steve. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production. Courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, as hinted at previously, we've got a very special guest with us today on Sports Community Radio. Her name is Jessica Brown, and she's a staff reporter for the Alice Springs Advocate. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Jess. Steve Pellis, how are you going?
Not too bad. How are you?
Oh, well, I must admit, I'm heading to the Northern Territory in 4 days' time, and I just had a look at the weather forecast this morning. It is, what is it? It's 22 degrees difference between Melbourne temperature and Northern Territory temperature, so I'm very much looking forward to that. Yeah, yes, yes. Now, Jess, you're a reporter with the Alice Springs Advocate, and for those that don't know the Alice Springs Advocate is the only paper of any note in Alice Springs.
Yeah, that's right. The only other thing we have in the territory is the NT News.
The NT News, which I must say is one of our favourite publications. It's got the world's best front covers. Well, apart from
yes.
Your own, of course, obviously.
No, totally
agreed. Now, Jess, thank you very much for joining us. We've been doing a series of interviews with key people from the media, talking about how clubs can engage or getting them to explain the processes of, in your case, how a newspaper works with deadlines and who makes the decisions as to what goes in and what doesn't go in. So, so if you can just take us through, I guess, the people involved in putting a newspaper together and what roles each of them play in identifying stories and then deciding if it goes to print or not.
All right, well, just in our newsroom, I'm not sure how it works in bigger newsrooms, but we have about 10 journalists.
Yeah.
2 of those are sports journalists, and I think the rest of us are pretty much general news. We have a features editor, we have the editor who looks over everyone else, we have a deputy editor, and we all kind of work together to decide what we're going to do. So, you know, even though our editor is the one who in the end picks all the stories and says, okay, you do this, you do that, we all pretty much, you know, we get to have our own input. We get to put all our tables on the story on the table and say, you know, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm following. Our editor will say yes or no, or he'll say we can do this in a better way, we can look at it from this angle. But we all pretty much work together, which is really, really good, and that's one of the things I really love about community papers.
Oh, absolutely, and community papers are one of the biggest, you know, supporters of grassroots sport there is. So we're so grateful to have you on the show. Now, if I'm a club in Alice Springs and I've got a story to tell. First of all, before we work about the process of how to get that story into the paper, what are the stories that your editor and you are looking for from the sports clubs in Alice? Like, what are the themes and the types of stories? Because it's not all about one of our last guests, Sam Squires, over the last couple of weeks from Channel 9 News in Brisbane. She said, It's not about the points and podium, the podiums. Is that the way that you look at it from a newspaper point of view, looking for the stories behind the scenes, or from a newspaper point of view, you do come at it more from the points and podium type scenario?
Well, I think it depends. Like, our sports journalists, obviously, are you know, going out there to all the games, and they want to know who won and by how many points and that type of thing, whereas me as a general news journalist, I'm not really looking for that type of thing. So anything from receiving a grant or, you know, receiving multiple awards for one particular thing, or even, you know, working across multiple organisations, multiple sports groups, that's all amazing, you know, especially when you've got someone who is working with one place and then they're working with another club, and then they're working as an accountant or something during the day, like, that's amazing. It's hard enough going to work from 9 to 5 every day. If, you know, if you've got someone who has overcome some type of hurdle, you know, I guess broken a leg or something in a car accident,
yeah,
and told they'd never be able to walk again.
Yep.
And if they've come back and started playing rugby, that's amazing.
You know?
It's the type of human stuff that we're looking for. So, you know, everyone gets excited about reading stories about this person who thought that they'd never be able to play sport again, never be able to walk, never be able to do anything like that, and then all of a sudden they've just got this strength from goodness knows where.
Mm.
And yeah, it's the human aspect that we're looking for.
Okay, it was interesting. The very first example you gave was you know, a club receiving a grant, where most clubs wouldn't even consider that as newsworthy, but It is, isn't it, really? Because the grant then empowers the club to do something which is good for the community.
Oh, for sure, definitely. And if that's come from another organisation, say like a bank or even us, a newspaper who's held a fundraiser or something like that to raise money for them, like, all of that is awesome stuff. Like, it may not seem like a news story, but especially in a small town like Alice Springs, you know, anyone receiving a grant is like, wow, you were chosen over all these other people. That's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just funny listening to you talk like that and going, that when you put it in that context, that really is something to celebrate in the community, especially within the community. I mean, that's really cool. So I'm a club, and we'll keep using the grant scenario. I'm a club, yeah. And so let's use Alice Springs Hockey Club, because you've done a story for us, well, including for us lately on Alice Springs Hockey Club. But so let's say Alice Springs Hockey Club got a grant.
Yeah.
How do they then go about, I guess there's two ways to do things. There's the formal process of the newspaper, and then there's the backdoor way. So let's look at the formal process first. How would they go about getting the paper aware of the story and then hopefully into the paper?
Well, a lot of small clubs and stuff like that don't really have advertising, or they don't have one particular person who goes out there and sells their story to people. But I love it. I love when people call the office, and we've got a person at the front who will listen to everyone's stories and distribute them to all of us. So, yeah, I love it when people call in, and then, you know, our person, our admin person comes in and says, you know, this person's out front, they've got this story, you know, who wants to do it? And we're like, oh, my God, I want to do it, I want to do it. So, yeah, just even just going to the front desk, even just walking in the front door and going to admin and saying, hey, I've got this really cool story, is there someone who wants to listen? You know, that in itself is amazing. It'll work. It'll totally work. We're always excited about getting stories.
And that's one thing that's really important for clubs to understand, that they're not intruding on the reporter or the journalist by telling them the stories, are they? Ringing them up and saying, hey, I've got this good story for you. That you welcome that sort of interaction.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, we look crazy busy and we run around like headless chickens, but, you know, it's always great to have someone come and tell us the story. It's always, you know, we welcome that type of thing. It's hard to find stories, especially, you know, for us, the summer season is so hard because no one's in town. So we're scrambling for all these stories. It really, really helps when people come in and say, hey, we've got this really, really cool story for you. Would you like to do something about it?
See, to listen to you talk like that, I mean, Joe and I have the pleasure of running training sessions all around the country. And, yeah, clubs just think the media is such a closed shop that they can never get their stories in. But here you are telling us that there are certain times of the year and potentially certain, times of the year where you're just scrambling for stories. You want stories to be given to you and on a platter so that it just makes your life easier. That's completely different to the way that the clubs would perceive it is getting in the media. So the key is to be continually putting your stories in front of the... So apart from putting ringing up, so which would you suggest if the club had time, an individual within the club had time to just do one way of contacting you, how would that be? Would it be via email and media release or phone call or social media or?
I don't know. I think if you've got someone who can write media releases, then definitely go for it because it's a lot easier to distribute that to lots of different people than it would be to just walk into every single office and say, hey, you know, here's my story and tell it over and over and over again. But I think, it depends, I guess. Like, if you've got a good relationship with one of the journalists, say one of the sports journalists who you see, you know, down at the footy field every weekend when your mate's playing football or something like that, just go up to them and have a chat to them. Like, you know, we might say, you know, hang on, I'm trying to concentrate, go away. But, you know, it's better than having to go through all the processes. You know, if we're already there, it's easier than, you know, driving down to the local paper that's, I don't know, on the other side of town.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it just depends. It depends what kind of situation you're in. By all means, if you see someone down at the footy field, go and say hi, even just to say hi, you know. We may come to you later for another story. You know, you may have been at that footy game that we missed and we want to know what happened, so we want to give you a call and we want to use you for some quotes or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's always good to have a good relationship with the journalist, and it's the same with us. It's good to have relationships with the community.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. So the relate for clubs to build, let me rephrase that. clubs should really think about as part of their overall communication plan, for want of much better terminology, building relationships with the journalists and just the journalists, or would you include the editors and sub editors in trying for clubs to try and build relationships with and so that they have an understanding of their club and their vision and what they're trying to achieve and their role within the community, or would you just leave it at focusing on the reporters?
It doesn't have to be just the reporters. Like our editor, it's crazy how many people he knows. It actually makes me really nervous. Every day he comes in and says, oh, I spoke to this guy. And I'm like, who's that? He's met someone else. So, you know, it can be anyone. It can be anyone in advertising. You know, advertising come and tell us all the time, here's a cool story, you should follow it up. Here's the contact, give him a call. Or even our business manager. It can be anyone. Or it can be a mate who's my mate, you know. Any connection you have to a journalist, it's good, you know. You don't even if it's not to talk to us for a story, it's, you know, we're not horrible people. Sometimes we seem like we are, but, you know, just come and say g'day. Or if you meet up, the amount of times I've gone to a pub and said where I work and people freak out because I'm a journalist, they don't want to talk to me. I'm not going to all of a sudden start writing down this gossip that you told me about someone who lives down the street from you. Later on, you know, you never know. They may need to speak to me about a story. I may need to speak to them. It's just good to have that connection.
Oh, for sure. We strongly advocate that the clubs build relationships with their local journalists, so it's easy to pick up the phone. And to the point of inviting them to the events and inviting them to the clubs and inviting them down, specifically giving them invitations so that they do come, and then you've got the opportunity to sit down with them, even if it's for 10 minutes, and tell them what your club's about and tell them what its dreams are and tell them how what you're trying to achieve. And often there's a whole heap of stories just in that
oh, definitely.
Sort of conversation. Do you get many of your stories off following the various social media streams? I know you're very, very strong on, or what's the word, active, I'm looking for, on Twitter. And do you get many of your stories from social media, or do you get contacted much from clubs via social media?
I've been contacted a few times via social media, more so on Facebook.
Yep.
But me finding stories personally, Twitter is amazing. I love Twitter. It's the perfect place. Whenever I can't find a story, or I can't, you know, I don't have a very big story list and I need to, you know, find some more, I will always go to Twitter, because there's people just say stuff all the time and don't even think that it's news. The other day I followed up a story about the internet being really slow in Alice Springs. Someone happened to say that it was because everyone was on school holidays. I would have never thought of that as a story, unless someone put it on social media or said it to me, you know, walking down the street. It's amazing. I cannot stress how good social media is.
I could not agree with you more, and I'm just so glad that you have talked like that. So it doesn't matter how many times people try and connect with you through social media. That's, from your perspective, that's not intrusive at all. That's convenient.
Yeah, definitely.
So... Then you would, if I'm putting words in your mouth and kind of leading you in one direction, which is what we continually say to clubs, is potentially that, you know, you would be strongly encouraging them to be getting onto Twitter and putting their news, their club news through Twitter.
Yeah, definitely. Even if it's something like a little Johnny just kicked 20 goals in that whole game, that is amazing. That's awesome. I'd write a story about that. You know, it could be anything. Just stuff you think off the top of your head. Definitely put it on social media.
So from a club, it's a really good perspective to find out who the local media is, the local journalists, and then follow them on social media, and then hope or invite the journalists to follow their club. And so then that's a really good way of educating the journalist about your club, and then from time to time you can send them a direct message straight to the journalist when you think you've got a story that's of really noteworthy.
Yeah, definitely. Even if, you know, I meet people all the time and I'm just like, where do you work? What do you do? And, you know, they'll explain to me, and it's just so I have that knowledge. It's just so I know what's going on in the community. Like, there are so many sporting clubs here in Alice Springs. It wouldn't surprise me if there were ones that I didn't even know of.
Oh, so, yeah.
It's crazy, especially, you know, they're pretty big in community. So, people just coming in and chatting to me and saying, you know, we are here, we do exist. If something happens later on down the track, I'm like, oh, of course, I know what that is. I can go follow that right now. So, yeah, it's handy. It's definitely handy. And social media is just the most amazing thing.
Yeah, we couldn't agree with you more. Now, one of the big criticisms we get, and Joe's just glaring at me for not talking in the microphone, but one of the big criticisms we get from the media of clubs is that they don't tell the media, the journalist, early enough about the story, or too late. Or the other big one is that they don't take photos or video of of it, whatever it is. Could be a social function, could be whatever. When would you prefer, if a club's have a major fundraising that's unique, and you have a lot of unique fundraising events in Alice, but if you're having a unique fundraising event that you know is going to get some interest from your community, when would you prefer the club to tell you about that event? You know, a month out, 2 weeks out, a week out, as it's happening?
Preferably not as it's happening. I think it I don't know. Every now and then journalists need reminding. I will safely say that because I am terrible for remembering dates. So say a club has organised an event, say a month before it happens. Definitely call me up and tell me as soon as you've organised it, as soon as you've set a date, give me a call and tell me. Maybe 2 weeks off, give me a call and tell me again.
Yes.
And then maybe a week before, give me a call and tell me again. I write things in my diary, but there's so many things. My diary is overflowing. So it's good to know that it's happening somewhere down the track, but every now and then we just need reminding. The amount of times that I've frustrated people because I've forgot about events, and I hate it. I hate it so much. But, yeah, every now and then we do just need reminding. So if you do have an event, you know, happening, I don't know, like 3 days from now or something like that, just call the journalist and quickly tell them to say, you know, this is happening. I know it's short notice, but would you be able to get down there? We'll try and organise something as quick as we possibly can, even if it is the day before. We prefer it not to be the day before or possibly like an hour out. But, you know, it's one of those things. It's best to know way before it happens. But if you can't tell us before then, if it is one of those split-second things, then still tell us anyway. We'll definitely try and we'll try our best to come out there.
And you don't mind being reminded, you know, you don't mind someone ringing you a month out, 2 weeks out, or 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out, 1 week out, and a couple of days out. You don't mind that contact from the clubs?
No, not at all. I love it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just love talking anyway. If someone gives me a call, then... You know, they can say, okay, this is happening in a week. I'll give you a call like 2 days before and remind you again. And that gets me talking again. That gets me talking to them, and something may have come up within that time that they didn't know was a story and I've already picked up on it. So, you know, not just for events. It's just good to just talk to people all the time. I like the reminding because then I can kind of pick people's brains and see what's going on in, you know, the last week that I haven't spoken to them.
Yeah, and there's lots unfolding in the story in that time. And what about the use of photos? Do you like to receive photos, or is it preferable that you send the paper's photographer to the event, or should the clubs be taking some photos, you know, good quality photos that can be published by the paper, or that's not really worthwhile?
I know our editor likes to get our photographers to take the photos themselves. He says, you know, because we employ photographers, so, you know, we're paying for them, we need to make use of them, and they're good at what they do.
Yes.
We employ them because they're awesome at taking photos, so he prefers that. But if we can't get down to an event, it's really, really, really handy to have photos that someone else has taken, even if they're not, you know, amazing or, you know, photographer quality. If they're taking photos of what needs to be taken, you know, in the picture, then definitely we'll use it. Obviously, we'll try our best to get a photographer there, but, you know, it's just handy in those situations where there's multiple events on or there's no one working at that particular time or something like that. Yeah, definitely take photos for sure.
Okay, and last question, because we know you've got to you've taken some time out from an inquiry, actually, so we really appreciate you joining us here on Sports Community. So the last question that we've got is, when you receive a media release from the club, what information do you actually want to see in that media release? What is it that makes your job so much easier, and if it's easier, then highly increases the probability of the story being written and published in the paper? What is the information that you need to receive or would love to receive to make it as, you know, the model media release?
It depends on what type of story, but generally, generally speaking, it's the first sentence. The first sentence has to be really hard-hitting and explain exactly what the whole story is about in that one sentence. So, you know, try to get through what, when, where, and why, and how, I guess, into the first sentence. It sounds really impossible, but think of it like you write an essay and at the end you have a conclusion, sums everything up. Basically, you just take the conclusion from the bottom and flip it to the top. So the very, very first line, the first thing that people see. If it's hard-hitting and, you know, and it is all there in one go, we're more likely to go, oh, yeah, cool, awesome, all right, we'll do that as a story instead of sitting there and reading the whole thing. You know, it's hard, especially when you've got millions of things to do. You just want to quickly skim through media releases and go, yeah, okay, yes, no, yes, no. I can use that, I can't use that sort of thing. So if it's in the first sentence and we see it, it's the first thing we see on the media release, then we're more likely to pick it up and go, yeah, we'll do that story.
Fantastic. Jessica Brown from the Alice Springs Advocate, thank you so much for your time and more importantly, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with Joe and myself and the listeners of Sports Community Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, welcome back. This is traditionally a time when we regale you all with a top nine, one of our favourite segments on Sports Community Radio. But we're going to change it up a little bit this week and we're going to introduce a new segment for everyone out there. And this is a segment where we're going to cover fundraising because we've realised that fundraising is one of the most popular parts of our website at sportscommunity.com.au. So we're just going to walk you through some of the more different, more successful, quirky type of fundraisers that we come across just to change it up from the old sausage sizzle. And the one that we're going to talk about today is a rubber ducky race, Steve. Now tell me, what's this all about?
Joe, the inspiration for this story is actually, it happened just recently in Frankston.
Frankston,
of all places, for unique fundraising activities. But what they did, they had effectively a rubber duck race.
We're not talking a rubber ducky as in a rubber duck boat type life-saving.
A life-saving? No, Joe. We're talking about little bath rubber duckies.
We're talking about the one I still use at 47 years of age.
We're not going to talk about that one, Joe. We're not talking about that one at all.
But we get the general picture.
We're preferring not to get the picture, Joe. But yes, we're talking about the little yellow duck that we have that our kids play with in the bath. So,
right.
So there was a group in Frankston, and this one was a charity. It wasn't a sporting club. But what they did, Joe, which I found absolutely phenomenal, was they sold something like 1,000 of these ducks. Right? They sold 1,000 ducks for $10, I think it was. So a quick arithmetic, just whip off your shoes and work out that's $10,000 just straight in their skyrocket. They had a very good prize. Now, what they then did was they tipped all these ducks, all 1,000 of them all at once, into the creek, a relatively fast-flowing creek. And first couple of ducks across the line, first duck wins the first prize, second duck wins the second prize, third duck, you kind of get the drift there. The prizes were donated from their sponsors, so they didn't have cash and you've got to be very careful about offering cash prizes because a lot of states and territories don't allow that anyway. Or if you do, they certainly need permits. And so they had what they did. When you kind of visualise this very picturesque creek, 1,000 ducks being dropped into the water all at once, and then it was, I'm not sure how long the course was, maybe 500 metres. People lined along the course.
That is
first duck across wins.
That is amazing. Who would have? You just don't think that's very, very clever, and it would bring a lot of people into that fundraising exercise. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to slice and dice this up a little bit.
We are going to slice and dice,
and we're going to look at it in minute detail, as we do on our website at sportscommunity.com.au in our fundraising section, where we actually break all the fundraisers down into various sections to help everybody out there understand what they need to do to execute that particular fundraiser to make sure it meets their club's objective. So let's do it with this one here. Steve's giving you the general picture of how it works. Rubber duckies, you buy the rubber ducky. They get thrown into the creek. First one across the line is the winner. But let's go into it in a little bit more depth. Let's consider the financial considerations first. So in terms of the financial considerations for this particular fundraiser, it's quite an attractive equation because you touched on it. Nearly everything is donated, and the ducks aren't going to cost all that much.
No, the ducks don't cost much, and you can find, and it doesn't have to be a duck, Joe. I mean, you get what we're talking about is something that's very cheap, and you can get lots of them, and then you have a race or a nearest the pin or that sort of thing. But yeah, absolutely.
But the rubber ducky is quite clever because it's quite a famous thing. It's quite a visual thing and it's, it attracts people. It's quirky.
Let's have a look at the event, Joe. First of all, let's look at the financial side. It's only financially beneficial if you sell the ducks. Now, who's going to knock back a little kid that comes up to you and says, would you like to buy a rubber duck? Would you like to buy a rubber? What do you mean, would you like to buy a rubber duck? Well, you give me $10. We'll put your name next to this duck wing, and then the duck will race down the river. And if your duck wins, then you win the prize. You know, it's something that's cool. It's quirky. Now, cool and quirky also attracts the media.
It does. And that kind of gets onto our second category, which is promotion. So financially, it's attractive to local sports clubs because you can have in-kind or donated goods as prizes. It doesn't cost you very much to set up. You could work with your council to make sure all of that side of things is okay. So not much expense. In terms of promotion, this is a promoter's dream.
Yeah, but again, on the expense side, on the opposite of expense is revenue. It's very easy to sell something that's $10.
Yes.
That's quirky and fun. If you try and sell your duck for $100...
No chance.
It's a different story. You know, you're still going to, but you're not likely to sell 1,000. You know, but it's not that the clubs or this charity found it very, very easy to sell 1,000 ducks at $10, and because it was quirky, and so, but the event itself lends itself to capturing the imagination. So it's on page. Very early in the local newspaper. It's a great photo. People have lined the creek on both sides because when you say you're having a duck race, people are going, that's something I want to have a look at. I want to barrack for my duck, Joe.
And you know, over the course of the last few weeks, we've had our media spotlight segments where we've interviewed a lot of folks from the media, Sam Squires amongst many others. And all of them talk about how they're on the lookout, constantly on the lookout for human interest stories.
Yeah, and so this is something you'd tell the media well in advance, you know, and they're most likely they're going to have, that they're going to run the story a couple of times in the newspaper. You buy your duck, you know, that would be a story in itself. Buy your duck so you can come down and barrack for your duck on the Sunday morning as it races for the first prize to help. Yeah, your club do achieve its goals. So promotional, it's fantastic.
And it would just absolutely, I think in the industry they call it a brush fire, where it's something that starts small and just woofs up, and that's what would happen on social media with something like this, because it is so quirky
different.
And different that you could, you know, as a club you could post, selling of the ducks, you post all the pictures, and it would be absolute promoter's dream, I would say. And also, not only your television, but your radio, community radio, YouTube, all these news agencies would pick this up. So from a promotion perspective, it's also very attractive. So
you can have a lot of fun with it, Joe. I mean, you can do the race call of the ducks.
You do the race call. I mean, you just picture it. People would line up. They would line up along the course of the race to cheer these ducks on.
And that's what they did, looking at the photos.
And that's what they did. So, okay, so we've covered off financial considerations, including...
But just on the financial... Well, I guess we're talking revenue still. One of the benefits is that there's not the physical transfer of ducks. So you can actually, what clubs can do is they can set it up online so you can buy a duck online. So the club doesn't even have to sell all the ducks. They just use their social media, their newsletters, their websites, the word of mouth, go onto our website, buy the duck. So all the work's been taken away. The person's name, their duck number, their contact details are all in a database. And all the duck, all you have to do is number the ducks. So that means that you can have people not just in your local community buying the ducks and you having to sell them, but people like the friends of friends of friends that might live thousands of kilometres away might go, geez, that's cool, I want to buy a duck. You know, or I'll help you. I'll help your club and I'll help you do this. I want to buy a duck. So it's one of those things, Joe, that that you know clubs are often accused of just going back to the same people over and over and over again for their fundraising. Well, this has the opportunity to go well outside your community because it's something different.
Mm, absolutely. And the other thing on the revenue side of things is, you know, bound to attract some sponsors as well. Well, you know, who wouldn't want to put their name to it, especially if you're going to get some media attention? Then, you know, it could be the Bendigo Bank duck race, community duck race. It could be any one of those.
The Ingham Steggles duck race, Joe.
Absolutely.
Now, and because it, once you get the media and you get this viral kind of side of it going and large community interest, anywhere that you've got a crowd, Joe, then all of a sudden it creates other revenue opportunities such as the coffee machine, the fairy floss machine, the hot dog vendors, the, you know, and you set up a stand and sell club memberships and club merchandise and raffle tickets on the day to a separate raffle, or you might even, you know, you might even have, you'd have to check your permits in your states and territories, but you might even have a bookie that's running the odds on different ducks.
Absolutely. So pretty soon your $10,000 straight revenue turns into associated revenue from other activities on the day, which could be $5,000 plus, on top of which you get subscribers to your club newsletter signed up on the day, as well as potential of new membership. You know, when you think outside the square of everything that's going on, there's a lot of benefits to the club.
Absolutely, from one little duck.
One little duck. Okay, so we've covered the financial considerations and also the promotion and revenue opportunities. And we do this for all our fundraisers on our website at sportscommunity.com.au. We dissect them and categorise all the different factors you have to look at. So make sure you go and visit that page or that section of the website. Next thing to consider are the various licences and permits. And there would be a few, but it's not something, you know, in my experience, you sit down at a committee meeting at a club and you propose an activity and everyone sits there and goes, oh, it's too hard because we have to go and talk to the council or we have to do this or do that. But the reality is it's just a matter of maintaining relationships and being open and honest about what you're trying to do. And if you're trying to genuinely promote your club, which in the longer term promotes the community and health in the community, then people are going to help you out, including the council.
Oh, absolutely. So when we're talking licensing and permits, yeah, there very well could be a number of licensing permits, one from a council perspective, but also from a gambling perspective. So effectively, but all you need to do is make two phone calls, one to your council and say, this is what we want to do. And go to your sport and rec representative, first of all, the person that you're going to that you work with from your facilities point of view or your local sport and rec liaison. Tell them what you want to do. Get them to fall in love with the concept, which they will because it's, you know, duck racing, Joe. It's a cool concept. Unless you're an opening batsman for a cricket team, ducks are good, right? And then the next one is to the body that oversees the gambling. So the same sort of, same, it's different in each state and territory, so we can't be a little bit more specific. But those people that would oversee, say, raffles, who you would go to and contact if you were talking about raffles. So just ring them and say, this is what we want to do. It's going to be different in each state and territory as to what sort of permit may apply because it's a game of chance. And depending on the money that your event's bringing in may have its own limits as well. So, but two very, very simple phone calls to two groups of people that would be very, very keen for your club to progress that fundraising event. And so don't be scared of the licensing and permit side at all. In fact, embrace it, because their experience of running those sorts of events can be very valuable to the organising committee of the event itself, particularly council.
Absolutely. Okay, other factors to consider. Let's start with volunteers and staffing requirements.
Yeah, well, I mean, and this is where clubs come unstuck. And I guess if we can combine this with risks as well, clubs often don't resource their events properly. So whether it is the running of the event, sorry, the selling of the tickets, the promoting of the event, the holding of the event, and then the less glamorous but really important, if you want to be welcomed back, the cleanup of the event. So effectively we need to plan each stage really carefully about what you're going to do, set it out at the event itself, create a site map, look at what other amenities that you need. Like if it's a relatively remote part of the creek where it's not a public leisure area or facility, then there's not likely to be toilets and running water and potentially not electricity if you need those sorts of utilities. So you need to think about that. But also from a risk point of view, like if you're going to run anything around water, then we need to keep water and the crowd separate. So how are we going to do that on something that maybe 100 metres or 200 metres of water or 50 metres of water or however long that is? So we might need to have people stationed along the event, just keeping the crowd back, maybe holding barriers in or holding rope barriers along the way. So need to break down the different components of the event, Joe, and look at the tasks and to look at the skills of people that we need, and then recruit them accordingly, because you don't want to not have the right amount of people in your at your event, because that means that you don't deliver the event as well as it can be, or worse, people have a really unfortunate experience. And parking's another one, Joe, where people events get or organisers get a little bit caught away. How are people going to park? Do they know where to park? Do they know how to get in and out of the venue and those sorts of things? So we're starting to get into the event logistics. But that's where the work is just making sure that half an hour or an hour where people have come down to watch 1,000 rubber ducks float down the creek can turn into a nightmare if we don't get those event logistics right.
Mm. And the other one, probably the last one to cover off on, is whether alcohol is served or not. If alcohol is served, and that's fine, you need to cover off on all the various different licenses and permits.
Liquor licensing is another big one.
That's something that you can work with your local council on. And if it's a non-alcoholic event, then probably a little bit easier to manage. But you might want to provide some drinks and refreshments and those kind of things. And again, you need to make sure that you've got the appropriate licenses and you've covered off on what you need from that perspective, because you may not think that you need to get those kind of things, but you do.
So food handling,
yeah, all of that kind of stuff. And your council can help you out on that.
Let's just think a little bit big, grander scale, because we'd like to do that, Joe. You might need some licensing for the fireworks that you're going to have when the duck floats across the finish line.
Wow.
So that's just taking your event to the nth degree. So, yeah. It's a great opportunity, Joe, and one that we should encourage clubs to consider.
And on that last point that you make, and it's something that you should all, every club out there, keep in the top of their mind, is that when you're running an event, don't just think of it as a singular event. Mm. Don't think of it as something that has a cause and effect. Think of it as a vehicle to achieve a number of goals. So this event could help you get more members, could help you get more people looking at your Facebook pages, it could help you get more people subscribing to your newsletter, it could help you raise awareness, forge contacts with the media,
forge relationships with the council.
Forge relationships with the council.
Have the mayor start pull the trigger on the gun that starts the race, for instance.
So this little ducky that I, you know, snidely remarked upon a fundraiser event idea that Steve come up with is in actual fact a boon if it's treated with respect and planned accordingly.
It is. It's a great... And another thing, just in closing, Joe, it's one of the things that clubs are always looking at, events that engage the family and engage the local and broader community. So consider in your next fundraising event to hold a rubber duck race down your local creek.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If you've just tuned in and like what you've heard and you want to catch up with previous episodes or replay this one, then visit our podcast page at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can find all our previous episodes for download as well as show notes. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter for the latest and greatest in grassroots sports news. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, but don't just listen to the episode. Why not subscribe to our podcast feed so you can automatically get updated when a new podcast is available? And give us a review so we can improve what we do. So on behalf of me, Jonah Vella,
and me, Steve Pellis, thank you for making us part of your sports community.